Hey everyone, thanks for joining in to our C3 Church Global Podcast today. I'm Phil Pringle, the host, your host, and today we've got Joanna Mikak, our producer, sitting in the studio with us. Hi, good to have you here, Joe. And Chad Keating, he is all things technical, our engineer. Really good to have you on board this morning, this afternoon, Chad, with us. And today, our guests are Mark and Bernadette Kelsey, long-term friends of both Chris and I. It's such a pleasure to have you guys with us.
Thanks, Phil. It's good to be here. Gosh.
Well, we have known each other for nigh on 40 years. We're kind of growing up together now.
Yes.
Well, I'm still growing up.
We haven't started growing up. We've known each other longer than we haven't.
Yes, that's true. Don't you wish somebody would tell you how long it takes to grow up? Because you thought you'd be growing up by 20, 30. Mm. And those old people who were 50, oh, golly, they're nearly gone.
Over the hill.
And then once you get through 50 and now 60. Me, 60, and you guys are still young.
Well, once you grow up to a point, you realize that you'll never grow up.
So. That's true. It is a growth process. Well, it's such a delight to be able to share with both of you. We've chatted on one of those before, Mark, but to have Bernadette here, one of the delights of my life as a friend. I feel very privileged to have been able to journey this far through life with Bernie.
Such a joy. And Mark,
because we've done so many things together, from skiing, boating, never done golfing.
No.
We have.
We missed that one.
We have.
Oh,
I can't
remember.
Not very well.
Well, not for me.
No.
Yeah. It'd be pretty optimistic to call my game golf. Mm. I don't know, scrubbing, walking.
Yeah, I play regularly, once every 15 years.
That's great. So, Mark and Bernie, you are the champions in our movement of two things, I would say. Mm. You're the champions of the Express Course, which has trained and developed numerous ministers that are now active and alive and have been part of a process of training, but has been a very intense one-week moment of fitness, teaching, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And you guys have done that all over the world for so many hundreds of really great ministers today. Yeah. Plus, you are champions of emerging ministries and are always pushing for that part of the vision to keep young life and young men and women rising, which is absolutely awesome. Let's talk about Express just for a second. Anyway, we're going to lead eventually into servant leadership, which is what we prepared to talk about today, and we will get to that. But I just wanted to actually establish a bit of background and what you have done besides starting a church in New York and staying there for 12 years, way back in the mid-80s, you started that and put a stake in the ground for C3 in America and then decided to come back. And today, your son Joshua and daughter-in-law Georgie run one of the finest churches in New York, right there starting in Williamsburg, and they've spread out around five boroughs and then beyond Paris and Berlin, doing an absolutely incredible work. And so all of that has come out of your lives. And so the reason I recap these things is so that we know who we're talking to and we absolutely establish the authority of the things that you have got to say. So coming to the Express, what are the elements that you see are key in the developing of young ministries?
Well, with Express, I mean, that started maybe, 16, 17 years ago. Mm-hmm. We had the idea because when we came back from New York, and we chatted, and you said, "Look, let's focus on church planting." And so we were planting churches organically, and then we decided to put a little bit of strategy and intentionality into it. And one of the elements of that was not just vision and strategy, but training. And we're doing a yearly course, a day a week, but we realized people couldn't get to it. Because they couldn't necessarily travel from further afield, and a day a week was a fairly big commitment. So we thought, all right, how can people get access to this?
Make it more accessible
so they can come to Sydney for a week. And that was one element, so accessibility. But also we thought, let's do something that's holistic so that it includes not just leadership training, but your whole life, you know, health around family, your physical world, relationships,
prayer life, yeah,
the whole thing. So, and the third element is let's have something that's immersive. Mm. So they're not just listening, but they're getting involved, and the immersive learning experience we found. And we didn't know how it was going to go. It was quite sort of experimental
at first, yeah.
And then it ended up being a blast, a lot of fun, and we realized that the immersive thing really didn't just train people but shifted them.
Yeah. Right.
So they took the experience and what happened in that week back to their lifestyle, and we found that they began to change things like add prayer to their world, add fitness to their world, and the whole experience was
different. I know a couple of people there who lost a lot of weight.
I did.
After being on that, because you guys are right into fitness, which is awesome, and you can keep up with the whole fitness regime of what you do. Do you find that okay, Bernie?
Yeah, I love it. I love it in the mornings, and we bring the warrior in.
She's the female warrior. She's fitter than a lot of us.
Right, right.
I love it. Love the physicality of it.
Yes.
And, it's great. It's a great way to start the day, and we do it. We do all of it with every delegate. So, you know, we get up early and pray with them. Then we go and train together. And it's kind of like, I guess, that immersive part is not like do as I say, but, you know, do as I do.
Yeah.
So we do everything with them. We eat meals together.
Yeah.
Lots of conversations around that. Yeah. Fully immersive in that sense. And we've watched people's lives shift. And, yeah, like the people that lost weight and stuff, there have been some great stories back where people have, like, wives have written going, thank you, you know, it's like saved our marriage and, you know, just
exactly
just great things.
Well, it's one of the hardest things on earth to do.
Yeah.
To lose weight.
Yeah,
and I salute anybody who's managed to do that and keep it off because it's a challenge in today's society, driving in cars and sitting around all day. And for pastors, it was once considered a non-event. But really, I think that's caught on in the last number of years that, hey, guys, let's get our act together. You reduce your authority when you're exhibiting, you know, some lack of discipline. And even, you know, I have no apology saying that here. I think that we all should give ourselves to a regime that helps us at least stay within, you know, a manageable area of fitness.
Yeah. And you've led the way in that for years yourself, which has been a great, and that's that leading by example thing.
COVID hadn't helped me.
COVID hasn't helped anybody.
COVID hadn't helped me though, man.
That's
you know,
challenge.
Like, I've done, and neither has getting, you know, beyond 65. I think, I used to think my metabolism was slow. I can't even spell that word in now, you know.
I mean, metabolism or slow?
What is that? And then COVID, you know, sitting around, you can't go out, you can't do this.
I know.
And when I was traveling, I've been traveling for 40 years, you know, you actually have a better rhythm then. Arrive at the hotel, get up in the morning, go to the gym, eat like this, do that.
Yes.
But then getting back at home, the psychology is I'm on a break.
Yeah.
I'm having a holiday. You know, I can goof off. And
plus the fridge is right there.
Yeah, the fridge is right there and it talks to me. I can hear it. Come over here. But anyway, we're trying to find new rhythms.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's massive. Recently, the fact that it was just last week, the college asked me to do a short course on the theology of health.
Okay.
So we actually built around it actually a theology of the body. Because for too long, nobody really understood that the body is actually part of our redemption. So,
totally.
And so it's body, soul, and spirit, et cetera, et cetera. And we are God's, he is the steward of our healing, but we are stewards of health.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And so we own that space. So he says, you look after your health. I mean, only he can heal, but we look after the health side.
So, that's so good.
And so I think as leaders, it also gives us more energy.
Totally.
There's all sorts of, you know, as you
yeah,
know,
yeah.
The physics of it helps you think clearer,
yeah.
Function better, et cetera.
You know? Yeah. So. Do you know that the highest selling books in the world are diet books? Do you know what the second highest selling books in the world? Cookbooks.
We
are messed up, aren't we?
We don't know what we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think how can you be putting up whole shops that sell cupcakes today
yeah.
in the world saying, you're not meant to eat sugar.
Eliminating sugar from the diet book.
Yeah.
It's, oh, my gosh.
It is.
And that's that often the Western culture thing of fads. You know,
yes. Mm. Yeah.
It's all about this and yeah. all about that. So I think the whole diet thing, mm. I yeah. mean, health is a better focus than diet. Yeah. But, you yeah. know, that's easier said than done, by the yeah. way.
Totally it is. Mm. Yeah. And I think just eating – I refuse diets. I just – think, yeah. eat sensibly
yes,
and don't
yes.
eat until you're stuffed and yeah, yeah. you know, all that sort of
all
thing.
All the well, some basics.
Yeah, because I find that when people go on a diet for 4 weeks, then it finishes and you're sort of left without mm. guide rails and it was mm. a full-on sort of splurge on one particular way of life, but it passes. Mm. So I think just to pick up just a common sense way of living where it doesn't occupy too much of your focus. But yeah. anyway, moving on from
yeah.
that,
yeah.
the emerging voices, obviously a lot of them would be in those express That's platforms.
Right.
And seeing what an amazing thing. For me, the most exciting thing about our movement right now is the amount of young leaders.
Mm.
They are everywhere.
Everywhere.
So in our church here in Sydney.
Mm.
I don't think we've ever seen as many young, on fire. I love millennials. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of people have said a lot of negative things about it. You won't hear one negative word from me about no. this rising generation. No. I love them.
They're wonderful.
They're living for a cause. Yeah. Then they've got a healthy dose of cynicism.
Mm-hmm.
They love community.
Yeah.
And they want to build a church.
Yeah.
Totally.
They're passionate.
How do you think we can help, as leaders, young ministers rise?
I think it starts with seeing them, you know, and then accepting them. Just exactly what you said. I think the criticism of the next generation yep. does not afford them an ability to rise in that kind of atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing them and recognizing them and then believing in them and creating opportunities for them to be able to be what they are and to hear them, because they've got great thoughts. They're the new day leaders. They're coming through and they're attuned to their generation. And if we dismiss what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're hearing and saying, then we are cutting our impact as leaders off, I think. I think it's an all-in thing. Include
totally.
Them in the process.
And it's hard to hear them sometimes.
Mm.
It's hard to hear the next generation. Because the thing I heard, one of the words I heard maybe 3 years ago, was that the top desire, the top value
yeah.
in a list of things that generation wanted was safety.
Mm. Yeah.
And I thought, what? I'm adventurous. I like danger. I like, you know, stepping out.
Risk taking.
The black runs on the ski.
Yeah. But they were saying, no, we got to, because there have been so many abuses.
Yes.
And so many things that have taken place from powerful leaders and people and abuses of authority, has created an unsafe world for some. And they just said, so we needed to make that an ambition.
Yes.
And hear them and help, let them help us create environments that were safe.
Yes.
For younger people. And I thought that for me, that was one of the changes I needed to make because I thought my vibe was better to put danger in front of safety and throw safety to the wind. But they're saying, no, we need to make it a safe environment. But outside of that, they're very entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And they'll take risks in other areas that are legit. Mm. And so I've seen, you know, more startup businesses by these guys. I know one young guy in our congregation who runs 4 businesses, and he's just a brand new married guy. He's got coffee going on. He's got graphic arts going on. Then we've got people on staff. Like Jacob and SJ, you know, just boom, they're starting these businesses that are going great.
And they're not afraid of work.
No, they're not.
They're not afraid of hard work.
Not afraid of hard work. And also they are one of the risk areas is that they're not afraid to change careers or combine things.
Mm. Right.
The singular professional direction concept, which is really our generation, it's not even in their thinking.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. But I think seeing that new generation, like Bernie was saying, and I think one of the shifts that we've noticed, obviously it's an issue of age, is that as we've gotten older, we probably focus less on leading them than more parenting them, you know.
Like, right.
Not trying to be their parents or anything, but the whole fathering thing and the shift of leadership sort of. And I think that involves things like believing in, encouraging, you know, just lifting them up, et cetera.
Yeah, it can't be huge. Overestimated. Yeah, yeah. And it can't be overemphasized because families have broken down.
That's right.
That's true.
Yeah. In our world. And in that breakdown, the most by far common situation that happens is that dad isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So mum is the one looking after. And so fathering, as you say, just for a father to hug a young man and tell him he's loved, they haven't had that.
Yep.
No.
Which I think we can do.
We can do.
In the church. I don't think we can be the complete replacement for a father, obviously, but we can provide fatherhood.
Yeah, I think in the space of spiritual context, leadership, church world, particularly church leadership, if we did nothing else, we'd be happy to keep doing that. Even now in COVID, we spend probably a lot of our time in that space just on Zoom calls and just listening and encouraging and, you know, and half the time, well, most of the time the answer's in them in terms of the questions they might be asking, but we'd, you know, say, what do you think? And draw it out of them.
Mm.
And they've actually got the answers if they feel encouraged, you know.
Totally. Yeah. That's a total disciple-making concept right there.
Yeah.
Pastoring says, let me pray for you, how are you, and this is what you should do. This is the guidance that we'd give you. But disciple-making, which is what you guys are brilliant at, is saying, what do you think you should do?
I think one of the other things too that we've noticed, and I know we've said in other contexts, is that, you know, the older you get, the part of our future is discovered in looking in the generation behind us.
Mm.
And like Bernie was saying, they've got ideas that relate to the current generation that as people who are in the older generation actually can't see. So I'm asking them, like, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
Wow, where did that come from? The ideas are actually brilliant in them.
That's
and
right.
And then we grab that and then tell others about that and spread the good news. So
yeah. And when you give them the credit, their chest puffs out, they feel accepted, affirmed, and it's like God the Father from heaven saying to Jesus, this is my beloved Son in whom I'm well pleased. And so when a father-like figure says that to any of these young men and women, they haven't never heard stuff like that before. They've just been berated by the press and by other leaders and even in church.
Mm.
Where, you know, you get down there, young man, one day when you're older, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
And it's such a restrictive thing on releasing young men and women. Seeing them, Bernie, tell us how we see them.
Well, I think it's using the all the faculties, seeing and hearing at the same time. I mean, seeing is just noticing, you know, it's all in the little things, isn't it, really?
It is.
It's it's walking slowly through the crowd.
Beautiful.
In the sense
exactly.
of I'm not on a mission to make my life great, but I'm here and I'm present and I'm here and I'm walking through life and I see these individuals and they catch your eye somehow. It's like
that's it.
It's a spirit-led thing,
it is.
Really. And that's and God great. Shows you, you know,
it
you can't
is.
See everybody all the time.
Right.
He shows you people, gives you people.
Yeah.
And then I think if you just slow down and take the time to have the conversation, it just one thing leads to another.
So it's beautiful.
Like little doors opening other doors. And, you know, people, it's amazing down the track actually having been, like we said at the start, with you guys, you and Chris, for 41 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
The number of people that re-enter your world and there's conversations and situations that you've been in with them in a previous time
right.
that you don't realize that what you said or did
right.
or even just a simple smile. I've had people say to me, you know, 10 years ago.
You smiled.
You smiled at
Nobody
me.
Smiled
like
at
you
me
noticed
since,
me. And I'm just like, oh, wow, you know, that's incredible. But yeah. God, that's that river of life flowing through us to others. It is. We don't always know where it's going to land, but it's flowing. And
yeah, they can be complete watershed moments that the future hinges on for people, and just saying, I always think that we should always bless people when we meet them.
Yeah.
Like the Bible says, kiss one another, greet one another with a holy kiss. Well, I've been greeted with a holy slap every now and then. And I think being greeted with a holy kiss, kiss people, love them. I don't mean literally people who are listening today. I mean, maybe that is appropriate in cultures, but I'm using the word kiss as a metaphor for be sweet to them, be kind to them, and tell them they're loved, and be encouraging and positive, because you might never, ever meet that person again.
Right.
And what an opportunity right there to let them know the meaning of their life. Mm-hmm. You could say to them, you know, when you did that, that was such an incredible thing. Or I heard this about you the other day, and it's just amazing what you're doing.
Yeah.
You might have heard some negative stuff, but why on earth would you ever repeat that to them? Mm. You need to repeat things to people like Paul did. Your faith is spoken of all around the world.
Yes, yeah.
We've heard about you from there. And I told the Macedonians about how incredible your giving is.
Yeah.
He's just bragging on people everywhere, building their lives up, building up the church. Mm. And that's what we're called to do.
Yeah.
And I think we can do that for this emerging generation.
It's a generosity toward them. It's it is that kindness toward them that includes them in your life. And I love the quote, be kind, for everyone you know is facing a huge battle. And there's not one person really right now anywhere listening to this podcast that isn't facing something, you know.
Right.
And so that kindness that can be extended by seeing, by hearing, is going to be a transformative thing in their world. Yeah.
And, you know, this is, for me, this is a very serious calling on us.
Yes.
To speak to this next generation, because our suicide rates are through the roof.
Yep.
And if I ask you guys here who are like in the mid-60s, of age, you're not you, Bernie, you're like 34 or something.
No.
Yeah. Yes, looks it.
Thank you.
But if I was to say, okay, how many, when you were at school, how many fellow students did you know who suicided?
Zero.
No one.
No one.
No one. How many fellow lady students, women students, did you know who had, who became pregnant and had abortions? It's like zero.
No. Mm.
And we are now in an age where values have changed 1,000 times, but our young men and women, for some reason, it is only going north. It's the numbers are only increasing, and so it is an extremely serious issue. It's not just a nice opportunity for us to actually help emerging voices. It is essential.
It's essential. It's life.
It is imperative, because there is a move afoot spiritually to decimate
the next
voices
generation
that God is trying to raise up, like they did with Moses, even with Jesus.
Mm.
Infanticide was, you know, brought on by the ruling powers. But today, it is essential. And I would say to any pastor, any leader listening here, to raise up from within the congregation of people that you're leading, not just bring in from without, because that sends a signal to all the people that are there that none of them are any good, but to actually draw out the gold that is in our young men and women all around us and help them feel valued and loved, and they have a high reason to keep on going when the times are tough.
It's so huge. And I think that same thing applies, say, for us at and the leadership level of the younger leaders emerging. Even though they're leaders and called and stronger, et cetera, they're experiencing the same battles, even as spiritual leaders and leaders of churches. You know, I think they're living in a very different age where the emotional battles, the ideological battles that they're facing,
criticism,
the social media, and that has just accentuated that.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways they've become clearer targets for those battles, whatever level they're experiencing. And therefore, I think it's even more onus on us to keep encouraging them to keep going, because they are the shepherds and the voices into their church communities that if they fall over,
That's a big
and it stops the flow and opening of encouragement to that next generation. So.
I really think that helps us into the subject that we began to talk about with servant leadership, that we are not here to dominate people but to develop people.
Mm.
We are not here to restrict people but to release people as leaders.
Definitely.
And that means I am here to serve my congregation. They are not here to serve me. So my vision is for their life to be bettered, not for me to fulfill my vision using them to accomplish it, which sometimes has happened and people have felt like they got used.
Yeah.
And I think that it is important that we shepherd the flock of God and that we do get them engaged and get them doing things, because no Christian's going to be a fulfilled or happy believer just sitting. Mm-hmm. Every week, their spirit will be frustrated and ends up complaining and criticizing. So, getting people to be engaged is super important, but making sure that engagement doesn't extend beyond their willingness to even do it, doesn't extend beyond their capacity, and getting that balance right, I think, is part of shepherding. But my observation of you guys as good friends over these years is that you've been both able to serve and lead and have both those simultaneously in your life. And I think that's an essential characteristic for anybody who's going to lead, that they also know how to serve or how to be led by somebody. So, and oftentimes it puts a person as the ham in the sandwich kind of thing, like where I'm directing you and then you've got to use your leadership skill to direct somebody else and we're expecting everybody to serve in that context. Tell us how you've navigated those sorts of days.
Well, I think that the whole serving thing is the minimum requirement of being a Christian. It's like for every Christian, we're called to serve. But it's also a high calling, you know. It's the highest we can probably go is to be known as servants of Jesus. You know?
Right.
And I remember when I first got saved that one of the very first, you know, when you sort of go back and you think, what was that feeling inside of me? I remember that the encounter with Christ led me to such a desire to just simply help people.
Wow.
It was kind of like the spirit of Christ.
Well, you were a nurse. You had that from the beginning.
I did.
Just good at that.
Yes.
I did. I was doing nursing, but I also remember why I went into nursing. It was for the very same reason. I wanted to help people.
It's a gift, yeah.
But in the helping of people, when you're just trying to do that, you can burn out pretty quickly.
Yes.
The needs are huge out there.
Yes.
And so what I learned in encountering Christ was like the Spirit of God filling us. That's where the dynamic comes in.
Right.
That's where it's not me just trying to be a good person, a servant-like Christian. It's like I'm empowered to do this, you know. And so and he gives you that enablement.
Exactly.
Mean, the Spirit of God puts that inside of us. And I think it's a daily thing that you connect in the Word and you connect through prayer, and it just writes you every day to go out and to serve.
Yeah.
You know.
Gives you the energy.
And the leadership part of it is the serving as well.
Right.
And so you want to be a good shepherd, you know, lead the flock of God in a good way, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think, Mark?
I mean, when Jesus came and he radically changed the view of leadership, you know. He was a revolutionary in that space, because the concept then, and still very much in our corporate world today, is that the leader is the boss and you can say whatever you want, lords over those. Those things are changing, by the way,
totally,
in our current society.
Totally.
But I think the kingdom of God and the church world should lead in that
way.
And so he radically changed. I love when you read those scriptures, particularly in the Gospels, it's interesting that it's mostly, a lot of it's in the Last Supper.
Right.
A lot of those
dialogues,
or in this case monologues in the Last Supper. So he wanted to leave them with a lasting concept.
Yes.
Before he disappeared.
Beautiful.
And
so he washed their feet.
Yeah, wash their feet. And because but that was preceded by arguments amongst them.
Yes.
Of who's the greatest. Who's going to be the greatest? And he says, hey, guys, let me just – and he didn't just talk about it. He lived it, exampled it. So I think one of the keys to seven wisdom is not teaching but example and lifestyle.
Yeah. Totally.
And I think the synthesis between leadership and servanthood is a really tough one, and you alluded to that. Like, when am I a leader, when am I a servant? But, of course, from a kingdom perspective, you're actually both at the same time.
Yeah.
And I think one of it's been I lead down and serve up. Because actually we servant lead up and we servant lead down.
Right.
And so it's the way we deal with people.
Totally.
So I think I think possibly, you know, maybe one perspective I have is that some of the areas where that has not happened well in church world is when that separation has taken place. So it's like I'm the leader, you serve me.
Right.
And I think that distorts what you extract from people.
Totally.
Whereas if as you said earlier, if my leadership of you involves serving you,
yes,
without compromising the fact that I'm still leading,
yeah,
then your life is going to be blessed from this.
Exactly.
You know? So I think getting the synthesis and the tension of that right,
synergy, but basically
we're here to serve people. And,
we are.
And he showed that. You know?
Yeah, the word leadership doesn't even turn up hardly in Scripture.
I think three times.
Yeah, but serving's in there quite a lot.
I heard recently someone, and I should remember who it said, but some a currently famous preacher said, look.
Famous preacher.
Well, sorry. Great. He currently said, it'd be great when we don't have to combine the word servant leadership.
Right.
Yeah.
So when we hear the word lead in a church context, it assumes servanthood.
Yeah.
So.
I think the word minister is actually also meaning it's somebody who ministers to you as a servant.
Yes.
Mm. And I read a really interesting quote about Abraham Lincoln the other day, and it said he never led by obvious command. He always brought suggestions. Yeah. He always used suggestion. This could be a good idea, but he really wanted you to do it. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what you needed to understand. And he would write long, long letters pointing out all the merits of a particular course of action without ever saying, Do this. And appealing to the good sense of the people to actually buy into it. And I think
that's what you've been doing all these years.
I
notice. I've been sitting here in many meetings.
Then the people buy in. If they say, you know, that could be a good idea. But if you're just getting people to follow like a drone, a command, you're not getting their body, soul, spirit, or their mind. Mm. They're a machine carrying out an order. But so sitting around a table, I would always try and get, like you say, with young people, getting their input. Mm. What do you think? Yeah. Tell us what you think. And let everybody put into it, and then having a candid conversation about the whole thing. Well, that ain't going to work. And then they have got to prove that it will work, and that's good. So you go through the process. And I want to get defeated in those arguments if there is a comma. I want them to win because winning is not my goal as a leader. Getting a job done, and I know that if they win, they feel like their contribution was respected above my own and others, flip that the sense of buy in instead of buy out is enormous.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you've taught us all these years is that give people a job to develop them.
Yes.
You know? And if it was giving them a job, is actually trusting in them and
totally.
And it develops them.
Yeah.
So we serve them by creating environments in which they have got responsibility.
Yeah.
And in other words, we're saying, hey, we believe in you.
Yeah.
And allowing them, like, you know, the whole thing of have a mistake on me.
Yes.
It's not about perfection. You know? No. It's not about that. And let's go on the journey of development.
Totally. And the mistakes are where you're going to learn. We're going to fail more than we succeed. And so.
Well, I've proven that.
Yeah.
Lots of grace.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to feel bad because of a failure. It's a learning experience and a character developing experience. It's
failing forward.
Failing forward. Well, guys, that's about it for today. So thanks so much for your wisdom, input, faithfulness, loyalty, friendship.
So great.
Couldn't have done any of it without you.
Love you.
Yeah, we're so thankful for Mark and Bernadette Kelsey, legends in C3 folklore. And and legends is part of the history of who we are today. So it's been a pleasure having you join us today, whether you've got earbuds in your ear at the gym, on that treadmill, or down at the beach running, or on a bicycle somewhere. That's how I do it. Generally listen to podcasts on my bicycle. But if you're out there in your car, in the traffic, stuck, and you've been listening to us, well, I'm trusting that this has been a blessing and it's helped you. I'd love you to hit that subscribe button and we'll turn up in your inbox once a week with fresh content. On a Wednesday, mostly. And actually, I'm just looking at Joanne and she's giving me a big nod saying, hey, thumbs up, yep, Wednesday's the day. So be excited. Every Wednesday we're coming to you, and tag a friend. Let somebody else know and get them to join in, and we'd love to be speaking with you more. And once again, thank you for jumping on and joining us with this weekly podcast. Look forward to talking again next week. See you then.